Chapter 1. London, 1873. A man's life was bookended by two events, the day he was born and the day he went toes up. Interspersed throughout were other critical moments, but for the Earl of Rosemont, only three were of any consequence: the day he wed, the night his wife died, and the morning she rose from the grave to wreak havoc on his life. Sitting at the desk in his library, opening the newspaper his butler had dutifully ironed, he once more read the letter that had ruined his appetite at breakfast 3 days earlier. To the noble ladies of London, it is with unheralded sorrow, tempered by a great deal of hope, that I pen this letter. The very fact that you, gentle ladies, are reading it today signals that it has been 1 year exactly since my passing. We all know gentlemen seldom observe the full mourning period of 2 years, while women always have the more dedicated hearts and adhere more fervently to society's strictures. I, for one, am glad we allow such leniency toward men, as I want my darling Rosemont to be saddened and without the comfort of a woman for as short a time as possible. To that end, dear ladies, I call upon you to hasten the close of his period of sorrow and bring forth his smile. For you see, it was his smile that first drew me toward him. It was ever so slow in coming, but when it did arrive, it fairly took my breath and softened the countenance of a man whose pride sometimes has the better of him. He is not an easy man to love, and yet love him I did, for I saw a side to him that few witnessed. He has brushed my hair, rubbed my feet, and not only read me poetry with animated passion, but written it as well. Ah, dear ladies, his voice is a soothing baritone, his features most comely, and his shoulder incredibly comforting when I required a haven to absorb my tears. His eye never wandered, well, except towards sweet shops. He does so enjoy his lemon balls. In spite of my flaws, he remained the most loyal and steadfast of husbands. Win his heart, and find yourself falling into a lifetime of happiness. With my most sincerest regards, the departed Countess of Rosemont. Each time he read it, the cold-hearted lie she'd meticulously penned mocked him. She hadn't loved him, not in the least, not with one iota of her being. The daughter of an industrialist knighted by the Queen, Elise had been in want of a titled husband, and at only 19, she'd known well how to work her wiles on him. He had little doubt his smile had drawn her, that much was true, but she'd also been lured by the title he'd inherited only the year before. He'd been all of 23, infatuated with her beauty and teasing eyes that promised wicked adventures and a tantalizing escape from all cares. When she'd suggested a tryst among the plants in the conservatory, during a ball held at his married sister's country estate, he'd been only too keen to accommodate her. Being caught by Elise's father with her skirts up and his trousers down had resulted in a rather hasty trip to the altar. But the triumph mirrored in her eyes when they were interrupted alerted him that he'd been cast into the role of gullible fool. It had been a hard lesson learned, a high price paid, and he'd made a solemn vow to never again be duped by anyone of the female persuasion. A marriage based on a lack of trust was no marriage at all. During the first 2 years, they'd not confided in each other at all, preferred to spend their time apart, he in the country, she in the city. He'd been in no rush to get her with child. The joy of having her had died in the conservatory, and he'd been hard-pressed to work up any enthusiasm when it came to the bedding of her. The third and final year, he'd seldom left her side, as the cancer had its way with her. Elise had made a point of listing all the things she'd never do. She'd not welcomed death, nor should she have. She'd been all of 22, with hair that would never grey and skin that would never wrinkle with age. Still, her letter confounded him. Why had she gone to the bother of writing it and arranging to have it published? To ease her guilt at having duped him? Knowing her deceptive ways, he couldn't take her missive at face value. So what was she striving to accomplish? Based on what he'd experienced since the message first appeared, perhaps she merely wanted to make his life as unpleasant as possible, as though the coldness of their marriage had not been punishment enough for falling into her trap.